This is Walk-In's Welcome with Bridget Fettesy. I'm Bridget Fettesy, and you are welcome. You know the drill. Please subscribe, rate, comment, share, reach out, tell your friends, send smoke signals, whatever. We love your feedback and we want to hear from you. If you like our work and want to support us, the best way to do that is join Fettesy.com. You'll get access to behind-the-scenes content, outtakes, discounts on merch, and the ability to submit questions for some of our upcoming guests. Support your favorite scrappy little internet heroes at Fettesy.com.
Hey, everybody. Ryan Leaf here. We are about to drop 3 bonus episodes for my podcast, Bust, the Ryan Leaf Story, the most honest, transparent, and vulnerable podcast you will hear. Me in front of a microphone taking you through the start to the finish right here on Podcast One.
This week on the podcast, we welcome Rena Raphael. She's a journalist who covers health, wellness, tech, and women's issues. She contributes to publications such as the New York Times, LA Times, Men's Health, and Fast Company magazine. Her industry newsletter, Well To Do, examines the latest in health and wellness. She is also author of the new book, The Gospel of Wellness, which is why she came through today to talk to me. And we had a really great wide-ranging conversation about the wellness industry and our experience with our own dabbling in the wellness industry. And I love Rena, and her voice is really important in this space. Enjoy. I'm with Rena Raphael, everyone. Welcome to Walk-In's Welcome.
Hi there. Excited to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you about your new book, The Gospel of Wellness, which I feel it's such an interesting topic, and just on a personal level, this is fascinating to me because as I was reading your intro in the early chapters, I was like, oh my God, this is me. I am this person that has, I've done all of the things.
Well, same here. I mean, that's kind of why I wrote the book, because I used to be obsessed with wellness and try out every new trend. And because I was so obsessed with it, I became a wellness industry reporter. So not only did I do it personally, but then I did it for work.
Wow. How did wellness become an industry?
Well, you know, none of this is actually really new. A lot of these trends and practices have roots that go back decades, and some of them even over a century. We have always had quacks and snake oil salesmen. That's nothing new to America. But what you see in the last 10 years is that this industry really, really ballooned and became part of the general culture. You know, even the way people speak, you have people now say things like, I'm practicing my gratitude. I'm working on my self-care. Mm-hmm. People just didn't say these things 20 years ago. And there are several reasons for that. One is just, you know, social media allowed a lot more alternative health healers and wellness gurus to sort of get their message out. But also, there is something to be said about the fact that for a lot of people, life feels overwhelming. The news cycle, tech, addiction, lack of community, feeling overwhelmed. And so people are searching for solutions. And at the same time, there has been eroding institutional trust.
Right.
So, you know, and again, this isn't new, but people sort of rejecting what they see as a very toxic food industry, not trusting doctors. So there's all these convergence of trends that came together. And then an industry saw that there was a real opening. And not only that, they could get away with selling their stuff and there was no one to really oversee or call them out on it. Sometimes even the media didn't do a good enough job of calling out, you know, supplements or certain trends. And so it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And consumers, such as myself, are just aching for solutions. I mean, mm-hmm. That's why I was interested in it. Here, any problem I had, this industry came in and said they could solve it. You're not getting enough sleep. You feel overwhelmed. You feel lonely. Here, I have all the solutions for you, but it's going to cost you money and it's really individualistic.
So what is encapsulated in the wellness industry? What falls under that umbrella? It seems massive. Is it it's meditation, yoga? I mean, what are just the categories?
Right. This is part of the problem. The number one question I get asked is, what is wellness? We've come to a point where people don't actually know how to define it anymore, because you're right. It could just as easily mean meditation as it does activated charcoal toothpaste.
Right.
Right? There is no definition, particularly of wellness, because how do you even define well? How do you define health? It's really individual about what you need. At its base core, wellness is all the things that we do prevention-wise or maintenance-wise to feel better physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. But that's a really, really big ambiguous category. So that can be nutrition, sleep, relaxation techniques. And whereas a couple of decades ago, I think it was more honest, it was really about the things you could do on your own outside of medicine or insurance to take care of yourself. Now it's really devolved into skincare and spa and what I would call temporary band-aids, right? And it's all about what you on your own need to buy, or it's leisure activities. So it's really, really consumption heavy. And one of my pet peeves is that a lot of the reasons we don't feel good, we feel so unwell, we feel so sick, we feel overburdened, you know, has nothing to do with the fact that you didn't buy something or you didn't spend enough time doing yoga. That's ludicrous. We have these big issues that require systemic solutions. But instead, this industry sells you on these individualistic remedies, and many of them are just temporary band-aids.
Right. Yeah, there's not much of looking at the system that creates a lot of these problems, because why would it? You know, it's
well, money's there to making it, you know, but it's much easier to tell someone to go download this app, go buy this thing, sign up for a yoga class. And that's not me saying that I don't find value in movement, nutrition, sleep management. Of course there is. It's just the idea that the reason we don't have these things is because you're not buying a certain product, or you're not buying a sleep tracker. It's just the messaging that's become so corrupted over time.
Right. And I think, too, like you mentioned, there's this snake oil salesman aspect to it where there's not really much science and there isn't much regulation. So you don't really know what's actually scientifically working, or what's something that you might have some improvement, but has it actually been tested? And I see this. I mean, even I wonder if even the marijuana industry comes under wellness.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, definitely anything can be wellness now. I see headlines saying Botox is self-care, buying real estate is self-care. I mean, that's the thing. It's such an ambiguous marketing term that we can just keep shoving more and more sectors underneath it. And the problem is that when something means everything, it starts to mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And people are catching on to that a lot. And so if you asked someone 8 years ago how they felt about the term wellness or the wellness industry, you would have gotten a very different answer than you're getting today.
How do people feel about it today, you think, versus 10, 20 years ago?
I see a slight course correction coming out of the pandemic, because there was such a spotlight on health and misinformation. And I think people also had time to reflect on what they actually needed to be better. So they didn't have access to, you know, their green juice shops or their fancy boutique classes or their spa retreats. And they kind of realized they could get the same effect by going on a walk. I think also the fact that we were so separated from each other for such a long time also highlighted the fact that all these things that we're sold on are so individualistic. And one of the biggest pillars of real wellness, not this fake stuff that's sold to us, is communal and social support. So we are seeing certain demographics, especially Gen Z, sort of reject this productivity-pressured, consumption-heavy idea of wellness. And a lot of them tell me they actually associate it with, you know, sort of millennials and that girl boss era that was all about this very perfectionist idea of what you have to do for your health. You have to take these classes. You have to drink this thing. You have to buy only organic. And they hate that. And I get Gen Zers telling me, hey, I'm going to have an Oreo and I'm not going to drop dead. Everyone calm down. So there is that sort of element. And also, I think just over time, people no longer drink the Kool-Aid because they've tried a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't work. I mean, so many women I know have a cabinet filled to the brim with stuff that isn't effective, like CBD cream, supplements. And so at a certain point, you know, they say, you know, how many times can you fool me? And we're seeing this a lot with CBD, where it was just so overhyped by marketing and media that people are like, you know what, I'm pausing before getting on the next trend. Mm-hmm. And wellness really is treated like fashion now. I like to remind people that, like, oh, 10 years ago was all about, you know, coconut water. Then it was bone broth. Then it was green juice. Then it was kombucha. Then it was functional elixirs. Now it's chlorophyll water. And it's like, do you remember how every year we're told there's something else that will magically cure our gut? And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it's fashion now.
Right.
Which is why you oftentimes find it in a style section or a fashion magazine instead of actually by health writers or in a science section.
Right. How much of the stuff is science-based, you know, evidence-based treatments? Of all of the millions of products, you know, can you kind of guesstimate how what percentage would be actually evidence-based? I feel like a lot of the stuff sells itself as being evidence-based, but it's hard. It's like I said, it's hard to tell what that actually means.
I can't really estimate because, again, it's such a big ambiguous umbrella category. So you almost have to talk about by sector. But what I often see is that there is this little kernel of truth, right? So you have an ingredient that has some beneficial properties, but what the marketing does is then, you know, kind of balloons it out of proportion and says, it will heal your gut. It will do all these magical things for you. When in reality, you know, a lot of our health is based on overall dietary patterns.
Right.
No bottle of anything is going to do anything for you. In the case of supplements, yeah, they can put a whole bunch of ridiculous marketing terms on their bottles, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's effective. It is illegal to sell a supplement that is harmful to your health, but the FDA does not regulate whether or not it actually works.
Mm.
So yes, there is a bunch of stuff that we just don't necessarily have good evidence for, or, you know, it's really kind of conflicting evidence. But, you know, if someone wants to sell something, they're going to cherry pick the science. They're going to, quote unquote, science wash the hell out of it to make sure that you buy it. So oftentimes you'll see things on a bottle like, you know, boost digestion or aids immune health. They use these terms that kind of mean something, but don't really mean anything. Like, what does that mean to boost? Mm-hmm. How do you measure that? They don't use words like cure. They can't use those terms.
And, right.
You know, it's not like they don't have a thesaurus. They just know what they're allowed to say.
Right.
And then people, consumers, see the scientific language and they're like, oh, okay, you know, this is a medical grade XYZ. Well, what does that actually mean? Does that mean it's effective? You know, clinically tested. Okay, it was tested. Does it mean it's effective? But, you know, and this is why my book goes into so much of the linguistics and the marketing terms, because it's so clever
right.
that it's really, really hard to see through. And I mean, I went years buying into this stuff. So I always tell the reader, I am no different from you. I had a pantry stocked with natural wine. I bought only organic. I bought into clean beauty. I was terrified of a conventional face wash. Like, you're not alone in this.
Yeah, I think that there's so much to mine in this topic. I was thinking about all of the things that I've been exposed to that might fall under the umbrella of wellness. And when I was reporting for Playboy, one of the things that I went and experienced was this, they were called orgasmic meditation or OM. And I went and it was so creepy and weird and felt like a cult, and it had just like a very strange vibe. And the whole thing is, you know, you kind of pair up with somebody and they rub your clitoris until you orgasm. And it could be I was like, what is going on? What if you have trauma? This is crazy. And then I read every single article that had been written about it, and it was like this Silicon Valley darling. It didn't seem like anyone had done any kind of actual constructive or critical thinking around this practice. And took the time to interview people or anything. It looked like they just got a free pass to the thing and a PR, you know, like a press release, and just kind of ran with it. And it was shocking, though, how many puff pieces there were for something that I felt like deserved some kind of critical eye. And then when I wrote the piece, so many people wrote me and they were like, thank you so much. This, and told me their crazy stories about their experience with it. And it became like a whole thing. And I was thinking about how it was presented and how if you had read all of the reviews at the time, and even one reporter wrote me and she said, since I wrote my original piece, I'm one of these reporters that regrets that I didn't do more looking into it, because the woman, it was like a whole crazy scene. But I think you mentioned just about how a lot of this stuff just gets, you know, sold
free
to
pass.
Us. Yeah, free pass.
From media, yeah, 100%. And I know it because I am the media.
Yeah.
And I was a health and wellness industry reporter for years. So definitely, it's not pressed upon reporters to do their due diligence. They rarely get called out. If they do, it's by scientists and they just ignore it. I mean, it happened to me once or twice when I was doing reporting. But also, reporters are subject to their own biases. And especially when it comes to certain topics, like let's say organic food or clean beauty, these things are repeated so often everywhere that a lot of reporters just take it at face value. They don't think they need to investigate it. Like, it's just a given. Like, of course organic is healthier for you, much healthier for you. And so they never check with a toxicologist or a dietitian. And that's what happened with me. I do think it's getting a little bit better, but overall, I see a lot of reporters do what you just spoke about, which is, I tried this. Mm-hmm. I see this all the time. I tried this cream. I tried this pill. I tried this bizarre Silicon Valley weird thing. And I liked it and it worked for me. Hence, it works. That's ridiculous. Just because something worked for you doesn't mean it's evidence-based, and it doesn't mean it's going to work for someone else. We're all very, very different. Mm-hmm. But in defense of media, I think everyone knows that a lot of publications are suffering right now. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the ability to give the resources as they used to. So I know that when I started reporting, I was given a lot of time to investigate issues. And then it just became more and more, okay, do a quick piece. Okay, yep. Just get it out within 2 days. And how many stories you have to write means that you don't necessarily get the time to really dig into whether this is actually honest or not, or whether there's actual evidence behind some scientific claim. So that's what's kind of happened to media.
And right.
They love also clickbait. The more surprising and ridiculous, like that Silicon Valley event,
yeah,
you know, people are going to click out of it out of curiosity. And that's kind of what happened with a lot of wellness. I mean, how many pieces were there on CBD leggings? Why? Like, no one's going to buy that and they know it, but they know it's good clickbait.
Mm-hmm. I'd never even heard of CBD leggings, but it's not surprising to me. Yeah, it's really fascinating, because when I first started doing yoga, which you talk about in your first chapter, you know, why is yoga always the answer? I was very lost. I was in an alcoholic marriage. I didn't really know that much about yoga. I just started going and I got completely hooked on it. And then I became certified as an instructor because I wanted to know how it was working. You know, it seemed to have such a profound effect on my life. And I still love yoga, but it definitely was like right at the, I would say, dawn of like the really craze, the yoga craze, where it was suddenly just everywhere. And then I saw that morph from yoga to, I guess, like CrossFit was another one. And then, yeah, I've seen, as a waitress too, you see all, I was a waitress for decades, and you see all of the health trends as a waitress. Like, if you waitress for decades, you're like, oh, the oat milk now, you know, it's like, oh, we're on oat milk now. Okay, we'll make sure we have it. So I see these like waves, but underneath there seems to be something more, you know. I don't know why you came to it, but for me it was, I was feeling very lost and not centered, and that's what sucked me into the wellness world.
Yeah. And in that chapter, I'm not anti-yoga. I'm not anti any of these things. I still belong to boutique gyms. I still go on Sephora shopping sprees. Like, I'm not above any of this. Mm-hmm. My issue was that we prescribe meditation or yoga for issues that are much bigger. Mm-hmm. And again, we're just sort of treating the symptoms instead of the root causes. So this idea that women are so stressed in this country, and then we just tell them, like, you need to do more yoga, you need to center yourself with meditation, is so patronizing when they don't have adequate childcare policies. They have legitimate complaints with the medical industry. Women's health conditions are underfunded. There are paltry maternity benefits. I mean, it could go on and on about legitimate complaints. And instead, we're just like, there, you need to work on sort of being more flexible. That's my issue. That's my issue with the discourse. It's not against movement or any of these things. But what I did see in my book, when in my research, and why I personally joined a gym, is because I was really looking to see people, and I wanted more of a community. I have a lot of friends. They are so busy. Trying to get them together for dinner is like herding cats. I just can't do it anymore. There's like 1,000 text message threads of like, this night, I can't do this night, but who's going to watch the kids? And so here was a solution that was offered to me of like, you just show up every Sunday and here's your community. That's one reason. A lot of people also join this because, you know, they're looking for purpose, guidance, a whole bunch of things that, you know, as I say in a very sort of, you know, I'm not being completely serious, but it's sort of like what we used to look for in religion, right? You used to go to church and find all of these things. And now you can kind of find them at your local fitness studio. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, and I have a lot of empathy for it because I did the same. However, you know, and this is not a pitch for organized religion, but organized religion has had centuries to perfect some of these things, like community. And so I did speak to a whole bunch of people who had joined, let's say, a fitness studio, and it was their tribe, their community, their family, all these words that were marketed to them. And then they lost their job. Do you think you can go to SoulCycle and say, hey, I don't have money more, but you're my family, and they'll still let you come? And I remember in New York, I did this one piece for Fast Company about a gym that was just for pregnant women in Soho. And I was interviewing some of the women about it. And I said, oh, well, why did you choose this gym? And they said, oh, well, we all got kicked out of our former gym. And it was really, really painful because that was like my community. But the instructors were afraid of instructing us past, you know, third trimester. So we're all here. And I was like, well, this, you know, that's the problem with a lot of these gyms. It is a community, but it's based on your financial ability or your physical ability. Yeah. So there are some issues here. Now, my point isn't don't join a gym. My point is just be clear about what you're being sold on, because they're using words like tribe, family, community, and it doesn't always pan out.
Yeah, you saw that too during the George Floyd protests and whatnot. There was everybody on Peloton was like, hashtag BLM, you know, and they, Peloton itself, all of these brands were kind of promoting this community or this sense of anti-racism. And it was just very marketed, you know. It felt very much like you're just trying to lob onto this movement because you feel like you A, have to, and B, I'm sure there's some good faith, you know, I'm so like jaded about this stuff, but I'm sure that there is a desire to connect to people and connect people. But it did feel very like they were trying to sell me something and using this movement to do so.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't be the only company to do that.
Everybody. Every brand. I mean, literally every brand. I was getting emails like, we are not racist, you know? And I'm like, well, I didn't think you were until I got this email. And now I'm wondering.
now you're suspicious.
Yeah. But that seemed to be, it's weird how, I mean, I just had a conversation with Sarah Hayter about this sense of community, and particularly online, the feeling of community where it's like the LGBT community. And, you know, in much the same vein as we were just saying, there that SoulCycle isn't going to let you in when you lose your job. We're like, the LGBT community isn't bringing you chicken noodle soup from the internet, you know, if you're not feeling well. And this, the weird way in which even that word community has been shifted and changed in our society right now. And we actually were talking about organized religion because I was saying, is there anything modern that is like organized religion in that sense? And I think the wellness industry tries to mimic it, like you said, but it's not providing that stuff that people get from actual community when the shit hits the fan.
Oh, totally. And in my book, I talk about that one of the turning points for me is when my father died, and really looking for memorial rituals, you know, rites of passage, and how to deal with that grief. And the idea of going to quote unquote my community, my gym, and working on my body was just so absurd. Not to mention, like, no instructor was going to come over with a casserole. And it really made me reflect, like, what, how much money and time I'm spending again on this community, and what am I actually getting in return? Because it did start to feel more and more just like self-worship.
Yeah.
That's what I was just, you know, working on my body and not much else. I know that's not for everyone. And I don't, you know, yoga is actually very, very separate from most fitness studios, but that's ultimately what that's selling you, is just working on yourself. And of course you should put time away for fitness and movement and feeling good for yourself. I just don't like the way we're marketing some of these spaces.
Right.
I don't think they're being honest.
Yeah. I think too, it's so, there is this, you know, need, obviously. I think the silver lining is that, like you said, we're talking about these things. And this is another conversation I've had with so many people on this podcast, is for all the talk about mental health and wellness, and which is good. I mean, my grandfather certainly had none of this language. My parents barely. I'm not sure that it seems like everyone is doing that well. I'm like, is mental health actually getting better? Or
right.
It seems like no. But that's just anecdotally me looking around.
Well, you know, I'm a big proponent that, again, one of the biggest pillars of mental health and wellness is community and social support. And that is severely lacking in this country. Again, even people who have a bunch of friends, they just don't have the time to see them.
Yeah.
You know, in the book I quote, I forget the name of the author, who mentions that oftentimes women are going to therapists and specialists because they, you know, back in the day, they used to go to their family and friends when they had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know what to do with your dumb boyfriend, you turn to your friend. But everyone is so busy now that they can't turn to their friends. So that they need to hire experts. And you saw this a lot with SoulCycle, where people were depending on their instructors to be their therapist because they had nobody else. So they would talk to them after class. Meanwhile, these instructors had like 8 weeks of training, mostly in showmanship. They weren't, you know, in any way qualified to help these people. But you're seeing a lot of people just gravitating towards wanting community, wanting to be with people. And I have a lot of empathy for that. I mean, that's what I wanted too. And I thought I could just buy it, you know, $35 a class, and I get a whole community and I get to see people. Swell. That's great.
Yeah. That's so crazy that those like boutique class prices too, it's so cost prohibitive for, I would say, a huge majority of the population. And that's one of my other questions, is who is the primary person, or what's the primary demographic? Is it like affluent? Is it what is that acronym? Off the offals, the affluent white liberal women. Is that generally the primary demographic for wellness, or is it like the guys who take supplements, or who's buying all this stuff?
Right. There's a lot of groups that are involved. Yes, they're, you know, I would say that liberal affluent women in coastal cities and big cities have really adopted the aspirational reinterpretation of wellness. I mean, it's really hard to talk about it because you'll find wellness everywhere. There are other groups who have adopted meditation and movement and hikes. So it's not just one group, but yes, that is one particular group that really sort of absorbed the messaging that it should be about fancy athleisure wear and boutique fitness classes and retreats.
heroin.
Yeah, and actually, I'd say that those are the two biggest themes I see in marketing, where it's either, you know, fear-mongering, like, if you consume this toxic ingredient, something bad's going to happen to your family. It's a lot of fear-mongering. Or it's tying health to aspirational desires so that you can be thinner, prettier, younger, less stressed, all these hopes that we have for the future. Those are the two, I would say, biggest themes. And, you know, within all this stuff, there are, you know, legitimate complaints against certain industries. There are certain things that are legitimate within this, but it's sort of gotten overtaken by the marketing.
Wow. What are the biggest legitimate complaints against within this industry?
Sorry, within wellness or just complaints against other industries?
Complaints against other industries.
Well, I interviewed a lot of women, and I have two chapters on this, about their dissatisfaction with medicine, with the healthcare industry. Now, you'll find very few fans of our dysfunctional healthcare industry.
Right.
You know, like
all across the board.
I'm a big fan of modern medicine, but there's a lot of issues. And that's just even for people who can afford healthcare. But a lot of women feel like they're being dismissed or ignored or not treated well in their doctor's office. And sometimes their doctors just don't have answers for them, especially if they have chronic conditions. You know, their doctors will sort of shrug their shoulders and say, I don't know what to do. And so when there's a gap like that, an alternative looks very, very appealing. And so they're going to alternative health healers. They're going to Goop. Sometimes just out of desperation, they're just willing to try anything. But the experience within medicine, which again, speak to any woman, whether or not they love going to the doctor or whether they have a strong enough relationship with their doctor, means that we're bleeding patients to the alternatives. It's something we need to fix. You know, I joke in the book that, you know, I've had like five gynecologists over the last 20 years. I don't even remember their names, but I can tell you all the favorite musical artists and the family member names of all my hairstylists.
Right.
That's actually like a problem. And by the way, doctors have the same gripes. They tell me we would love to spend more time with patients. Like we didn't go to medical school to treat patients like, you know, this is a factory farm, but this is the way the system is set up. So that's a legitimate complaint that makes women feel like, okay, I'm going to try something else. And, you know, there's been conflicting, you know, media reports that sort of erodes trust in these institutions. Not to mention there's the internet. So people feel like they can diagnose themselves. I mean, it's not just one thing. There's all these converging issues that make women say, huh, well, let's see what this holistic doctor has to say.
Right.
And oftentimes these holistic doctors will spend an hour with you, and women feel heard and they like the experience. But one of the bigger issues is one of the reasons your doctor just shrugs their shoulders is because women's health conditions have been underfunded and under-researched. Women weren't included in clinical trials as subjects until the 90s.
Yeah.
We're decades behind. So yeah, your doctor doesn't have an answer for you. And the answer isn't Goop. The answer is we need to fund more research.
Right.
You know, and if you're feeling more heard by Gwyneth than your doctor, then we have a major issue in medicine.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's the class and race thing is really interesting, too, because I was teaching at this place where I would volunteer. I was teaching yoga and meditation to these kids, and it felt it was good, I think, to expose the kids to it, but it also felt like I probably should have been working with them on their homework or something more tangible, because it was just a, I don't know, it felt, again, it felt like putting a Band-Aid on something that was systemic. You know, I'm like, okay, good. Like the yoga is good. It's helpful and it's good. The girls especially loved it. Maybe not the boys so much, but it also felt like kind of silly or stupid sometimes. Like I wish I could help this system here more, or the system that, you know, they were dealing with poverty and just all kinds of other issues.
But I guess I'd also ask, maybe they don't get access to certain leisure activities that they can really enjoy. There's something
that's part of the problem.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that, you know, is a mistake teaching them yoga. I'm sure they really, really enjoyed it. The issue is when we give the messaging that like, oh, are you upset Do you have all these issues in your community? This is how to calm yourself down.
Right.
That's when it becomes the issue. But there's nothing wrong with leisure activities. We need them, you know, and we need
right.
movement. You know, it's kind of a lot like workplace wellness programs where, you know, you go to HR and you say, I can't deal with all the work. And they're like, have you tried this app? Have you tried our meditation program? And it's like, no, the answer is like, you need to stop emailing me after 6 p.m. That's the issue.
Yeah. I'd like to take a quick break so we can talk about our sponsor. This holiday season, I want to give a gift to my loved ones that makes them feel special and unique. That's why I'm giving everyone I care about StoryWorth. StoryWorth is awesome. It's an online service that helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your relative or friend a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of possible options. Like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? Or if you could see into the future, what would you want to find out? After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all your loved ones' stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. This is such a great gift. And the thing I love about StoryWorth is it gives us the opportunity to ask those questions and even questions you never would have thought of before it's too late. With StoryWorth, I'm giving those I love most a thoughtful personal gift from the heart and preserving their memories and stories for years to come. Go to storyworth.com/walkins and save $10 on your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/walkins to save $10 on your first purchase. From curling and straightening to hairspray to overbleaching, we all have done some damage to our hair over the years. Lord knows I have with that perm that I got in 93 that destroyed my hair for decades. So if you're like me and struggle to have longer and thicker hair after years of damage, then you have to give Vegamore a try. With help from Vegamore, get healthy, beautiful looking hair without the use of harmful chemicals. All their products are cruelty-free and never contain parabens or hormones. Having Vegamore as my go-to shampoo and conditioner is a game changer for my overall hair health, particularly at this pivotal moment in my postpartumness when all of my hair is falling out. It has definitely helped with the postpartum shed and helped me feel like my hair is looking thicker. And with Vegamore, there's no risk when trying because they have a 90-day money-back guarantee. Don't let damage of the past hold your hair back. See your hair's full potential with Vegamore. Go to vegamore.com/walkins and use code WALKINS to save 20% on your first order. That's vegamore.com/walkins, code walkins to save 20% at vegamore.com/walkins. Do you know only 1 in 3 Americans believe we can fully exercise our free speech rights? That's why FIRE is stepping up to protect freedom of expression for all Americans, no matter where you're from or what you believe. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE, knows free speech makes free people. FIRE's mission is to defend and sustain the individual rights of all Americans to free speech and free thought, the most essential qualities of liberty. FIRE educates Americans about the importance of these inalienable rights, promotes a culture of respect for these rights, and provides the means to preserve them. FIRE will always be a principled, nonpartisan, nonprofit defender of your rights. Join the fight for free speech at thefire.org. How does the men's wellness, you know, sector look? What does that look like?
You know, men have their own pressures too. Especially when it comes to image, and you know, they're definitely shoved supplements as well.
Lots of supplements.
And bodybuilding. I focused more in the book on biohacking, which is really, really popular and also now part of the wellness umbrella.
What's biohacking?
Biohacking is a really fancy term for basically using quote unquote cutting edge science to sort of maximize your abilities.
Right.
It's sort of like self-optimization on steroids. You know, how can you spend a minimal amount of time on fitness to get the maximum results? How can you get just the right amount of sleep so you don't have to waste any time? And what I found, and this is not the only reason, but what I found is that the reason it's so popular in Silicon Valley is because having even just that 1% advantage over someone else could mean you get that promotion.
Right.
And they are working so much. They're working crazy hours that being able to only get, you know, a couple hours of sleep or taking some supplement or buttered coffee that's going to, you know, make you more productive is really, really important to them because they are that stressed out. So it's a lot of ways mimics what we're seeing with women, although right. the complaints are very different, but it is promising them, I can fix this problem for you. And it sort of dangles this glimmer of hope. A lot of it, unfortunately, is not evidence-based. But for a lot of people, they don't seem to really care if it's evidence-based. They don't look that up because they want to buy into it.
Right, right.
You know, they want sometimes control. Control is a huge part of the wellness industry, especially for women who feel like everything right now is out of control. So these ritualistic patterns or even, you know, popping a supplement, you know, makes them feel comforted, like, you know, like they can take control of, yeah. of what's going on in their lives.
I get it. I mean, I've gone to healers. I've been on ashrams, which is more of like an old ancient form of wellness. Like you were saying, this has been around forever. And I get the, like, I was riding my, we got a bike, a Peloton in the midst of the pandemic because I just needed to get some cardio. And I still love like their preachy, like, you go, girl. You
know, yeah. Like,
I get on the bike because I love the cardio, but I also need the like mental pump up. I'm like, sure. I need to hear them telling me to like go after it. And why do I need that? You know?
Well, you know, of course, people love those aspects. I mean, it's no different than we were in fifth grade and we had all those, you know, inspirational posters mm-hmm. on our classroom doors. Yeah, I mean, of course. And especially like if it's 6 a.m. and you're trying to pump yourself up to go do a workout.
Well, it's like the psychology behind why do I need some, you know, instructor to be like with their own little personal mantra that they're branding on Instagram and they're taking and running with. And I don't begrudge anybody any of this. Why that there, I think there's such an interesting psychology that underpins this whole entire industry. And for me, yeah. it's never feeling like I feel like I'm a psycho. Like I have to get, and what it is that I'm psycho. But I do feel kind of psycho. Like I have a really hard time relaxing. I have a new baby now. I have the career that I'm trying to juggle. And I don't feel like I can really relax because I don't have time. And I understand that like 20 minutes. And since I've been reading your book, I've been noticing all the like hashtags on Peloton where it's like working moms of Peloton. And mm-hmm. I was like, I get it. I get it when there's so many people pulling at you and you get on that bike and 20 minutes, it's just yours. And it yeah. is very individualistic. But I think with women in particular, there isn't much that's, maybe it's different if you're single or whatever, but particularly when I just think women give more of their essence and time, and particularly if they're parents, they're getting pulled in so many directions, and it's not horrible to think about yourself for 20 minutes of the day if that's oh, totally. What you can grab.
I would say the most mail I get is from working moms.
Yeah.
And of course, we're all pretty aware of the double shift and just how hard it is to work your job and then have to deal with, you know, children and housework. It's just unsustainable for the American woman who feels like, rightly so, they just don't have institutional support.
Right.
And so what I see a lot in terms of wellness is just this idea of sort of escapism. That it really doesn't matter what you do. It can be a face mask. It could be going for a walk. It'd be your Peloton. But just the idea of like, I need to detach and I need to just be by myself or do something for myself. And sometimes those go hand in hand with, you know, obviously societal pressures on women to be thin, to look a certain way. Sometimes that does dovetail. But yeah, of course, everyone needs a timeout and no one would argue that. And I think I quote a meditation teacher who says that, you know, women give, give, give. And so this idea that finally they're kind of given permission to just say, I need self-care time out. And it's funny because I spoke to some women who told me that if they told their husband, hey, I'm going to take an hour right now to go put on a face mask, they'd be like, no, what am I going to do? But as soon as they say, I'm going to go work on my self-care for an hour, it's almost as if she invoked mental health. And the guy was like, of course, you got to do that self-care. And it kind of, that's horrible. You should be able to say whatever you need from your partner. But it's sort of like it gave them the language to be able to get what they needed to take time for themselves. And it kind of reminds me a lot of when, you know, I mentioned another author who talks about the fact that a lot of men said, oh, I'm doing this, I'm training for the marathon to raise money for cancer. And if they said, I'm just training, I'm going to go biking for 8 hours every Sunday or running for 4 hours every Sunday, their family would be like, you can't do that. But they were like, but I'm doing it for cancer. And then I was like, kind of sanctioned. I'm not trying to make fun of these things. I'm just saying that like sometimes you kind of, I don't want to use the word cover, but like language matters. And so right. This idea that we're in a culture now where, yes, we are sort of motivated to take out time for ourselves is very, very important.
But do you feel like it's making people more selfish and narcissistic? Or do you think that one of the questions I had in my community when I put a call out to questions was, it was an interesting question of, do you think this industry is making narcissism worse? Or is it like a chicken and egg thing where the narcissism has been getting worse and then the wellness industry is booming because it is, as you mentioned, such an individualistic industry?
Yeah, I think it really varies on the individual. I do see some people who can take these things too far and get really, really into wellness culture, and then they just become obsessed about what they're eating and their body and their health, and they're fetishizing health instead of just sort of normally folding it into their lives.
Mm.
But I speak to the average woman who's like, I would love to be able to do that. I can like barely shower. So like, I don't think the average woman or man is becoming a narcissist. But there are, if you get too sucked into this culture, and I do see that quite a bit here in LA, which is like ground zero for wellness, then yes, it could sort of feed off of that in a way that is not healthy. And I mean, that's what kind of happened to me. I got obsessed with wellness to the point where it was unhealthy.
Mm.
I was afraid of processed food. I punished myself if I didn't take a certain amount of steps or exercise according to my Fitbit. I became obsessed with only buying certain products. And so, yes, I would say that is kind of narcissistic tendencies where I was just sort of coddling my health. That's not healthy at
right.
all. You know, like one of my takeaways from the book is, you can just relax a little bit.
Yeah.
But so much of the messaging is like all these very, very specific things you need to buy or do to work on your health. And that's just simply not true.
Yeah. And it becomes another thing you stress out about.
Of course. It's just, and it's another burden then for women. I hear this a lot from moms. And again, because there's just so much pressures on women to act and be a certain way or to be people pleasers. You see moms and nutrition, that's an area where it's just so incredibly fraught, where they feel like they have to do certain things and it drives them crazy. And it's like, moms are already so overwhelmed in this country. Why are you adding more things to them?
It's so great that I could write a book just on how insane the mommy world is. And I think too, you know, a lot of the wellness marketing, all of it, it's so fueled by Instagram in particular, where you're seeing mm-hmm. a lot
perfection.
Perfection. And just this, there's a lot of, because it's not really where a scientist is going to go to present their case necessarily, you see, you know, like the home birth kind of movement. And right now, the baby is starting to eat, and should I just make her some purees? But then there's a whole baby-led weaning method that is, once you go down that rabbit hole on YouTube, you're like, oh no, am I doing my child a disservice because I'm not making these french fry like, you know, shaped foods for them to try and eat themselves because it's good for their hand-eye coordination and this is the way they did it in ancient times and we only started using, like, it makes me feel crazy. You know, I just want her to try and start trying foods. But then once you actually start going down that rabbit hole, like any, and it's not wellness, it's, but the mommy industry is like, it's a whole other thing, but yeah, it feels like it dovetails with wellness because I'm worried about the wellness of my child. And I'm like, I don't want to put all this insanity on her. I don't want her to be absorbing like this crazy.
Totally. Yeah. It becomes almost like a competition. And also like, and I understand it, a lot of women just don't want to be judged by their friends. And so I hear this a lot in LA of like, I have to make sure I pack like the perfect nutritious lunch for my kid because I just don't want to get called out
for having like goldfish in it.
God forbid. And yeah, a lot of it does come from Instagram, which again is more associated with sort of this millennial productivity pressured perfect culture. And all these, you know, wellness gurus or like parenting gurus, I mean, they have the time to be online to make all this content and this perfect acai bowl. And let me tell you who doesn't have that time. Medical experts, doctors, because they are working with patients.
Yeah.
It's changing a little bit now. I wrote a piece recently for the New York Times about how more science influencers are trying to battle this stuff.
Yeah. On TikTok, especially on
On TikTok.
But, yeah.
It's a few going up against an army. It's so hard. But we absorb this messaging. And, you know, when you think about, let's say, 20 years ago, if someone wrote a parenting book or a diet book, you know, it kind of waited on your bedside till you had 10 minutes before you went to sleep to read it. But now these people can interact with you nonstop.
Yeah.
You can post several times a day. Even more, you can DM with them and get a personal relationship with them.
Yeah.
People just don't have that with their doctors. They are yearning for that. They are yearning for that guidance. And so I have a lot of empathy. I think women are looking for help, but sometimes these people are not helping them. And by the way, it usually ends with, buy my guide, buy my supplement, buy my, you know, whatever it is. Like, they're always selling something.
And even if they're not selling something, just your attention and clicks is making them money. You know, if that's how they're making their living, if they're an influencer or whatever, if you're a home birth influencer, they're relying on you to watch their videos and engage and
yeah. I heard a funny but kind of wild story from a friend here in LA where she told me that she was taking her kids to a birthday party and they spotted balloons tied to a mailbox. They got out of the car, get in the house, and they're at the birthday party and they're looking around and realizing that they don't recognize anyone. And they're like, oh, well, maybe these are just like neighborhood friends. And they're waiting and waiting, but they're like, oh, but like none of our child's friends are there. And suddenly my friend grabs her husband's arm and says, oh my God, we're at the wrong party. And she points and she says, and she points to someone pouring a bottle of Coca-Cola into a cup for a child. And she goes, no one we knows would serve soda. And that to me is like so exemplary of like LA mommy wellness nutrition culture.
Oh, yeah,
where like
nuts.
That was the giveaway. Like no one in their community would dare serve soda. it also reminds me of like, I watch the Kardashians. I'm a big fan. Don't judge. But there was this huge blowout between Kourtney and Kim where they were going to have a joint Candyland birthday party for their children. And Kourtney was like, okay, we can do it, but there'll be no candy. And Kim, rightly like, so, was like, yeah, we could just have like carrots as like, you know, candy canes. And it was just, you know, some of these things just go so extreme. It's a birthday party. Of course, you don't necessarily want to have soda 20 times a day every day. But like, again, health is based on overall dietary patterns. You can have a treat every now and then and you don't have to go crazy. But a lot of this culture is driving people to extremes.
Yes, it definitely feels like it only adds to the confusion. You know, there's so much and coming out of this pandemic. And as you mentioned early on in the podcast, the lack of institution, the just eroding institutional trust, and people don't know what to believe everything regarding diet changes constantly. So if you're somebody like me, who's in my 40s, it was like, you know, fat was bad for a long part of my upbringing. And then it was sugar. And then it's always changing. And you don't know really what to believe. And I think people want to say that it's you know, there it does seem like it's simple, like eat pretty much whole foods, exercise. But it doesn't seem that simple. It seems very complicated.
Yeah, I call it nutrition mania. And yes, what the media does is every day there's a new conflicting report. You know, one day eggs are good for you, the next day they're bad for you.
Right.
Like it goes on, and it drives people nuts. And I have to say, as someone who worked for a major news outlet for years before I was a wellness industry reporter, we knew that those were gold. So we would see them come through the wire. We never once actually even read the study. We definitely didn't check with an expert. We would just be like, oh, these perform well. And we just would drive our audience crazy. Not only that, we, you know, I worked for a major big morning news show. We would just put on experts every day that tell this diet is better for you, no, that diet is good for you. And then we drove our audiences crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with media. So at a certain point, what you find is that women are like, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. Just find me a guru or a leader who's just going to tell me what to do already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like it becomes too complicated. And so sometimes they do end up falling for these people who will just, you know, be very restrictive in what they say they can eat, but they almost prefer it because it's almost like, you know, Steve Jobs wearing like the black turtleneck. It's like, I got my uniform, I know what to do, and I could block out the noise.
Yeah. And I still don't know what's, I mean, every single day it's something that's bad for you. And I don't know how you take all that information in and just have, again, it becomes something that stresses you out, and really stress is like the worst thing for you. So
yeah.
Any of these things that are stressing you out, whether it's making sure that you're fully optimized and whatever, you know, you have enough steps, or it's very, I don't know. It just seems like I worry that this industry is actually making people feel more crazy and not sick or confused, well, at the very least confused.
I think that's why the backlash is coming now. And that's mm-hmm. why I think you see people saying, I'm not going all in anymore. I'm tired of this. I think we're seeing a lot of women, especially moms, say, I don't want to be made terrified of all these quote unquote chemicals. And I don't want to be constantly told I'm doing things wrong. And so you are seeing some of them just opt out more. And that's why Gen Z is not, I mean, listen, Gen Z has its own issues and misinformation, especially on TikTok. So I don't want to make it sound like they don't fall for some of these things. They mm-hmm. definitely do. But
yeah, I'm like, we're talking about the generation that was like, Anne Frank is a hoax or something like that.
No,
I was like, oh God.
And also, you know, whenever I talk about these things, it's no blanket statement. There's always different groups within every, you know, age group and demographic.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are seeing people tired of it a lot. You know, I remember I went once to the Goop conference, and I went to four of them. But the women, all the attendees sat in a conference hall, and they were just subject to all of these different food and nutrition leaders. And they warned them about nightshades and dairy and gluten. And it just went through the list of different speakers. And then we were let out of the hall, and it was just like, I can't even describe it. It was every fancy, healthy restaurant set up like a beautiful stand, like overflowing with like these gorgeous bites and like, you know, acai, but whatever it is, it was all there. And the women around me were terrified. They're like, wait, what here's safe? What here can we eat? And you almost wanted to laugh, but also it was so sad. I was like, so we're just driving people nuts. You guys spent $500 to be here and then be terrified of breakfast?
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I mean, Goop seems particularly crazy just in general, like some of the stuff that comes out of there. It's like a wacky, like the jade eggs. And, you know, the doctors will be like, please do not put jade eggs in your vagina.
And it's hard to actually parse out what Gwyneth actually believes in. She herself understands that a lot of this is just entertainment.
Right.
It's really actually no different than the medical road shows they used to have in sort of like a century ago, where like you went to go watch the snake oil salesman and like you kind of knew he was full of BS, but it was like kind of their version of dinner in a movie. And so Gwyneth knows a lot of this is bunk. And by the way, a lot of her fans know it's bunk, but they think it's fun and entertaining.
Right.
Now, health should not be entertainment. And so a lot of people I know who like Goop, they're like, yeah, I mean, don't take her so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, She does popularize certain ideas or products that are problematic, like adrenal fatigue or supplements that don't work. So she does have a greater effect that does affect other women. So she's not harmless. But Gwyneth knows a lot of stuff she does is not real and not evidence-based. She knows that, and it garners her attention, and she wants to be in the news. She actually doesn't care about negative press. She keeps courting it. It's a business decision.
That's even more upsetting to me. You know, that seems, I understand it, but it's still, you have so many people turning to you. And as we talked about, just how lost and desperate, and when you feel like you're not being heard, or you have a medical condition, or you can't, you feel like you have chronic fatigue or whatever might be plaguing you, and you're not getting that response, and you turn to somebody who, like, knowingly is selling you things that aren't necessarily evidence-based or even helpful, that feels even more insidious.
Oh, and it's dangerous, because when she tells people that they, you know, when she insinuates, I don't want to say she tells people, but when she insinuates you might have, you know, adrenal fatigue, or you should buy my supplement, or if you're tired, these people might have actual medical conditions where they can get real therapeutic treatment. But right. When they buy her bunk, they're not just wasting money, they're wasting time. They're mm-hmm. wasting, you know, their ability to be well. And that's where she becomes really kind of, you know, dangerous.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We always joke, we're like, we need to get something in the wellness industry, because there's just so much. As somebody who's in podcasting, you know, we're constantly getting pitches for brands that we, you know, do you want to advertise for this? Do you want us to pitch to these people? And it is crazy, the amount of just, in the podcasting world, I feel like there's definitely a symbiotic relationship between podcasting and the wellness industry. And the number of supplements that I say no to on like a regular basis is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's a funny thing about supplements, right? Because there's
so much. Do any of them work?
I mean, of course, listen, first of all, there are people who have real deficiencies and their doctors do prescribe them something for it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you think of like prenatal vitamins, there's definitely things right. that do work. But the majority of the things that you see on a Walgreens shelf or in your local CVS, no, there's just not enough proof there to show that they're effective. And also, it's for some people, it's sort of like if you're already hydrated and then you keep drinking water, it's not doing anything for you. If you don't have a deficiency.
Right, right.
So I'm not going to paint with too wide a brush, but the majority of them are not. And again, they use just such clever marketing and manipulative marketing that you don't really actually know what you're getting.
I'd like to take a quick break so we can talk about our sponsor. Our next partner has a product my husband and now Maggie use literally every day. They started taking AG1 because they didn't really have time to make sure they're getting all of the important minerals, vitamins, probiotics, prebiotics, all the things that you're supposed to take to ensure you're healthy. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. It's definitely cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Visit athleticgreens.com/WIW. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/WIW to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Watkins Welcome is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save over $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com and join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2020 and May 2021. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Why do we take these things and why do we gravitate towards the wellness?
Yeah, so there are a couple of interesting things that I found. Number one, you know, a lot of times we take stuff when we're at our most unwell. So we'll take a supplement or we'll buy a juice at like the height of, let's say, a flu, right? And then we start feeling better. And so we automatically assume it was the product.
Right.
But the truth is, it was just the passage of time. You were going to get better regardless.
Right.
So, you know, that's obviously correlation, not causation. And also, we tend to remember the times when things work, not when they did it. So I'm sure you might have taken that juice or pill other times when you were sick and it didn't work. But it's a lot almost like horoscopes. Like when your horoscope is right, you're like, oh my God, this works. But you forget the 90 other times they just didn't get it right.
Yeah.
So there's that part of it. And I think there's also something to be said about just even putting something in your shopping cart feels really good. It gives you that boost of efficacy, that boost of like, oh, I'm already on the road to like, you know, having a better health. I'm taking action for it, you know? And again, it's sort of this is praise on this hope. So we're off very, very optimistic, especially in this country. We're an optimistic nation and we're dreamers. We built Hollywood, Silicon Valley. We ventured out west to secure our goals and fortunes. So we want to believe in these products.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of optimism is gullibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might just not do our due diligence as to whether these things have any scientific backing to them. And then just lastly, and I discussed this before, a lot of wellness preys on our vulnerabilities or our hopes for the future to be prettier, thinner, less stressed. You want to believe in it because you spent the money. In the same way that I've convinced myself that my Estee Lauder serum definitely dissolves my wrinkles because I've invested in it.
Right.
And you see this a lot of times where people invest in something and then it no longer becomes about the facts. It becomes about the psychology. And so, or they over-identify with a certain value attributed to it. So you'll see this oftentimes with like, let's say, organic produce, where it comes to mean purity or good parenting. And so even if you try to show conflicting evidence of saying this might be more about the agricultural process than about actual nutrition and food, and you can eat conventional produce and you're not going to drop dead, they don't want to hear it because they've identified, over-identified with what organic food means.
Yeah, that seems like so much of this industry is giving people a certain identity, particularly around these little health classes. You know, I used to wait on all these women after they went to SoulCycle and they all came in and they had their glow and got their juices and it was like had their kind of, they, you know, they had had a kind of experience in the class and but they were so identified with like being that SoulCycle person.
Yeah. And I get into this in sort of one of the last chapters about the search for identity. But for a lot of women, especially, let's say, white upper middle class women, they are looking for an identity and it's getting harder and harder for them to find one that, you know, commands respect or that people will applaud. And so you'll even see this sometimes where someone will be like, oh, I just went to a workout and they're in all their Lululemon gear and everyone will be like, oh my God, you're so amazing. You worked out. It's the same reason people post gym selfies because people, in our society, we applaud people who work on their health.
Right.
And not everyone, of course, has the ability or their finances to do that. But yes, when you see a group of women all dressed together in athleisure wear, it's really no different than a bunch of Harley Davidson motorcycle bikers. You know, they have a certain type of dress. They speak a certain way. They buy certain things. And it is, I don't want to make fun because it is a sort of way for women to connect. I see this a lot in LA where women will be at a coffee shop and one will go up to the other because they're wearing the right clothing. They can say, oh, this is part of my clan. And they'll say, oh my God, I love your sneakers. Oh, where do you go work out? Oh, what, you know, meditation app do you use? It is a way of identity and a way to connect. But again, if you're talking about a society where it's becoming harder and harder to find a community, to find an identity, can you really blame them?
Yeah, no. No, and I do think, like, if you look at the numbers, it seems like America's getting fatter and more mentally ill. So, again, my kind of final question is wellness working? Is it having any effect, or is it just something else that's being sold to us?
I don't think we're ever going to really be able to measure that, just because, again, it's really hard to measure what is well or what is healthy. And also, it's just so big, this industry. I think there's a lot of good, there's bad.
I mean, let me interrupt, though. We can measure health to a certain extent. I mean, right. We know that America, is, right.
But wellness is, like, I'll give an example. It's really, really hard to judge diet studies, because, like, you basically have to keep people cooped up in a lab for years to judge that. So a lot of it's observational studies, or you're just hoping that people are actually eating what you told them to eat and that they're actually
doing it.
Really hard. It's really hard to measure wellness interventions, and also how do we track what everyone's doing? So that's kind of the issue. But, you know, there's a lot of in between. You know, like I say, maybe it's a good thing that some women are, you know, working out or going on a hike instead of doing boozy brunches. That's the new trend now for a lot of young women. I think it's great that I can go to the airport and there's a lot of more fresher, healthier options for me.
Definitely.
That's great. But then other things like clean beauty marketing or the normalization of pseudoscience, not great. So it really varies. I don't think anyone has an answer to that yet. And also, when we say, is it making this country healthier? I mean, who has access to this? I mean, this is what bothers me so much about the discourse on wellness. Like, if you're working two jobs and you barely get to see your kids, like, you don't have time to do a bunch of these things. And I think even when people talk about food deserts, which is a great example, people are like, oh, we just need to get certain communities fresh fruits and vegetables. Who says they have the time to cook them?
Right.
The reason people like processed food and, you know, like McDonald's, is because they don't have time to prepare it. And this isn't just even lower income women. A bunch of working women who are affluent that I know also don't have time for it.
Right.
So, like, there's just a lot of misconceptions about what we can do and what our abilities are.
Yeah. Wow. There's so much. I love this topic. It's just, it must be such a cool beat. How do you see things changing? I mean, has there been any major change or shift or anything since you, I guess the book, you wrote it a year ago. So is there anything major that you would add an addendum to, or?
Yeah, I do see media being held more accountable, and I do see more outlets pushing back on health claims. And again, I'm just seeing average women saying, I am tired of this. I'm tired of sort of what essentially became the hustle culture of wellness, of like, I have to do all these things. I have to constantly work out. I see people really tiring of their trackers, their sleep trackers or Fitbits, because it made them paranoid. Or they woke up and felt fine, but then their ring told them that they didn't get enough sleep. And then they're like, wait, did I get enough sleep? It was driving them crazy. Mm-hmm. That's not for everyone. I know a lot of people who love these trackers, but a lot of people are getting tired of this. And again, I think just coming out of the pandemic, they were like, I could just go for a walk, or maybe I just need to call my girlfriend.
Right, right. Call your girlfriends.
Yeah, actually. That's good. That's good wellness advice.
I'd like to take a quick break so we can talk about our sponsor. One of the things we all try so very hard to do at the beginning of a year is get organized. JustWorks makes it easier for you to start, run, and grow a business. Let me tell you how JustWorks can help your business. JustWorks is the ultimate HR platform for small and growing businesses, with simple software and expert support for benefits, payroll, HR, and compliance. Whether your team is remote or in person, you can give them access to national large group health insurance plans and manage onboarding, payroll, PTO, and compliance all in one place. I'm a small business owner, and it's very hard to keep all of this stuff straight. JustWorks is such a great, simple solution to help me navigate all of the complicated administrative aspects of my business that I often find overwhelming. JustWorks makes it simple to hire and manage remote employees across all 50 states. With JustWorks, you can take the guesswork out of employment and tax regulations and requirements. With more and more people working remotely and working across state lines, JustWorks is the perfect tool to help you grow your business and keep it organized. Take a look at JustWorks transparent pricing by visiting justworks.com/pricing. That's justworks.com/pricing for details. Watkins Welcome is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming. Like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting, all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking is easy, like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy. All you need to do is visit Progressive's website to get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare, so it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at progressive.com to join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Well, I ask the same two questions at the end of every podcast, and these are more about you. What is your biggest defect of character?
Oh, God. Wow. Give me a second.
You can take it however you want. It could be something that you're working on today. It could be something that plagues you, you know, for your life. However you interpret it.
All right, I'll be honest. I can be quick to judge. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've been working on. Mm-hmm. And especially myself. I mean, I think everyone knows that if you're judgmental of other people, you're usually the most judgmental of yourself.
Yes.
So that is definitely something I've been trying to work on. And I've kind of succeeding. I think it's like I'm very quick to judge, but then just let me sit with it for a while and I'll eventually come around to the right answer or just try to see the other angles as to why someone did something.
Yeah, it must be actually kind of good to notice that about. It's better to notice that about yourself and know that then you have to guard against that, particularly as somebody in journalism, than to have no self-awareness of the fact that you do that. You know, I think we're all judgmental. All humans are. People who are like, I'm not judgmental. I'm like, we all are. And sometimes it can be fun. It's usually like what couples bond over, you know, their mutual judgment of whatever. And I think that it's, I don't know. I know that I can be very judgmental. And again, that judgment usually lands on myself, which dovetails very nicely into why I was so attracted to wellness, because it's this feeling of like not being enough.
Yeah. I do feel like one antidote to being judgmental is just being curious. And I think that's one thing I have as being a journalist, where I do often, if I am judgmental, just will try to poke the bear and be like, but why? Why is this person doing this?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you do have a lot more empathy. And I think especially now, so many people are stressed out. They just don't oftentimes have the ability to think through what they're saying or what they're doing. That's different than brands. I'm not going to give them a free ride. But when it comes to people, definitely.
Yeah. And what's your biggest asset?
I would say it's, again, curiosity and having empathy. And I think that's why I wanted to write this book. I felt like a lot of times some debunkers or the messaging that should have hit me in terms of understanding what the wellness industry had become didn't sit with me because I felt really criticized or mocked. And I wanted people to know you're not alone. A lot of us fell for this stuff. A lot of us still fall for this stuff. And it doesn't mean you're stupid. It means you're being preyed upon by marketers. Mm-hmm. You're not to blame.
And sometimes I think you can knowingly fall for it if it makes you feel good.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
When you go into it and you're like, well, all right, this serum might not take away my wrinkles, but I like the way it smells and it's a nice routine at the end of the night.
Totally. And I'm, again, this is why I say, like, I still do, you know, I buy a ton of stuff off Sephora. I belong to something called The Class, which is basically, I don't know if you've ever heard of this workout.
I heard of it because I read about it in your book, yeah. And now I want to try it. I might have to go with you.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, scream therapy meets cardio, where just women yell and shout and are very vocal while doing jumping jacks and burpees. And it sounds absolutely insane to people. It works for me. I freaking love it. I will still go to it. I will defend it. But I also don't say that because it works for me, it'll work for you.
Right.
I just say, I dig it. You might like it, but you might think it's nuts.
When I was reading about it, it sounds a lot like when I was on this Osho ashram, they had what's called dynamic meditation. And it sounds actually very similar, but you do, like, you jump and kind of get your breath up, and then you do these little segments of activity, and then you go crazy and scream, and you can punch a pillow if you want, and you can, like, just let it all out or roar or whatever you want, and then you dance, and then you sit and meditate. And that's, like, the cycle.
You go,
it was amazing.
It's also just entertaining to me. I'm like, I love to see a bunch of women lose their shit.
Yeah.
I just think it's fun.
Yeah.
Because that's how I feel some days. So,
I want to go.
Oh, we should go together.
Yeah, I would love to.
And every now and then you get to see a celebrity and you're like, this is going to be fun to watch.
It's going to be amazing. I don't know if I can keep up, but I would love to go. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we find? Yeah, thank you. This was really fun. We should definitely go to The Class together, and then I can I can laugh about it and get addicted.
Yeah, you might get addicted.
I will. I know myself. I know that it will be my new addiction. Where can we find you online and your book and everything?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is Reens. It's 3 R's and then INS. And I also have a newsletter that tracks the wellness industry and trends. And it's called Well To Do on Substack.
I love that newsletter.
Thank you.
And your book is available anywhere.
It's available anywhere. It's called The Gospel of Wellness. And this has been so much fun.
Thank you. It's time for the weekly check-in with Bridget and Cousin Maggie. Hello.
Hello.
Celebrating my birthday.
Happy birthday, Bridget. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. It's very exciting. I made it 44 years just in time to see World War III.
Just in time to see the bombs start to fall.
Just in time to see Poland get us into another war yet again. No, I mean, strange times.
Mm-hmm. I know. We need to make those shirts, too. Too old to die young.
I know. Although it's funny how that definition of old changes the older you get.
Mm-hmm. But still, did you ever think you were going to make it to your 40s?
God, no.
No. You thought you'd die, like, early 20s.
I thought I would go out like all the cool people do at 27, maybe.
In a blaze of heroin glory.
In a blaze like of that. Glory. And no, that wasn't the plan, I guess. I mean, I didn't think I'd live past 21, honestly.
It's honestly a miracle you did a couple of times there.
Mm-hmm.
Came super close.
It is. I didn't think I'd live past 21. And in fact, a crazy person with schizophrenia in the psych ward when I was detoxing from heroin told me I wouldn't live until I was 21.
Oh.
That's... He was like, you don't have a snowball's chance of seeing your 21st birthday. And I was like, I'll show you, guy who's talking to the plants.
That's all you needed was motivation, was somebody to tell you you couldn't do it.
This asshole talking to the plants isn't going to tell me how long I'm going to live.
Seriously, that guy might have saved your life.
I think he did.
Seriously, nothing motivates you more than someone telling you you can't do something.
You know what's funny is even in sobriety, like, I thought about him many times when I wanted to go out.
Like, I wish I knew where that guy was. I could rub it in his face.
I'm sure he's dead. Yeah, that was sketchy. Being in a mental ward is unlike anything, really. Even though I was only there for 3 days, it was very much, it was clear to me that I was an addict and I was not
crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, and for people who don't understand the story, why were you in that mental ward?
Because my parents had a lot of experience with it and they didn't know where to take me, and so they brought me there. But also,
right, like basically they picked you up from like being incredibly ill.
No, I got dropped off by an ex-boyfriend.
Okay. Different.
To my house, and then told them that I was a heroin addict, and then they were like, well, we'll bring you to a mental ward.
Because that'll solve it.
Because that's where they had a lot of experience with.
Yeah, that was their solution. So, unfortunately.
Well, and because I had superficial cuts on my wrist because I was trying to get my boyfriend's attention, they also thought I should go into a mental ward.
Uh-huh.
But they were like, scratched harder by a cat.
By your daughter. She's got those talons.
Yeah, I've been scratched like harder by walking by a plant on a hike.
Yes. So then you were kicking heroin in a mental ward with no
drugs.
Yeah. No assistance.
Yeah. Cause then I got to the rehab on day 4 of my kicking, and everybody there was like, they didn't give you any drugs. I'm like, you can get drugs. But at that point I had already kicked pretty much.
Yeah.
Or I was through the worst of it. And God, that was just so horrible.
I know. And you were 19.
It was like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in there, though.
It sounds just awful.
I'll just never forget Fern. Just my inner monologue. Her, not the plant the guy was talking to. I realize it can get confusing. But this old lady, whose name I still remember, she was in the room next door, and she was like super old. She should have been in like an old person's home. Maybe she had dementia and was violent or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know why she was in there, but she would have these horrific, I would be coughing and kicking in the room next door. And I had a weird roommate who was a cutter, which cutters are just another breed too. And I was just pretty much curled up in a ball, and just, it's like, you're just sick and your body aches and it's horrible. And you're often like in and out of hallucinating and sweating and it's horrible. But next door, this old lady was like, oh God, let me die. Oh God, let me die. And she would just repeat that all day in between. Then she'd be like,
and you'd be like, just let her die.
And then there'd be silence. And then it'd be, oh God, let me die. I mean,
that is awful. I mean, that's so sad.
It was so sad, but it was also like, it felt like I was not sure if I was just hallucinating this person. Because that's how I felt.
Right, right. It was your inner monologue. Yeah. She was just like, voicing it.
Is this real or am I just imagining
it? I mean, and that's like a scene in a movie. You can't, people would be like, that's a little melodramatic, don't you think?
No, it was 100%. And then I was just texting my ex-boyfriend like, get me the fuck out of here.
Oh, God.
I don't belong here. I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. I'm just big boned.
I'm not crazy. I'm just a junkie. Mm-hmm. But there's a very big difference.
Very big.
So, yeah, these are the things I reflect on my birthday.
It's amazing. It's a miracle you're here. It really is.
These are the kinds of heartwarming after school special stories that I look back on.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Or you won't live to see the apocalypse. Tune in next week for another riveting episode that will change your life, help you get out of your own way, and solve all the world's problems. I want to thank our composer, Jared Elias, my co-producer and cousin, Maggie, and all of you out there listening. This has been Walk-In's Welcome with Bridget Fettesy. I'm Bridget Fettesy, and you're welcome. the dumbest line.